G'day, welcome back to English History, Fact and Fiction, episode 226, James 1 and 6. My name's Dick Newman, and the news, wherever I look this week, seems to be about bangy kill death stuff.
The guy the Biden administration droned, was he an aid worker or an ISIS-K operative?
The administration is, of course, reviewing that that strike. And I'm sure that a full assessment will be forthcoming.
So you don't know if it was an aid worker or an ISIS-K operative?
I can't speak to that, and I can't speak to that in this setting in any event.
So you don't know or won't tell us?
I don't know, because we're reviewing it.
Well, why don't we just check in with John Kirby of the Pentagon?
The Central Command talked about secondary explosions, I think, and that. But do you actually have visual evidence that there were secondary explosions? Are you convinced that there were? Because that seems to be one of the potential contributing factors to civilian casualties. So are you certain there were secondary explosions?
Yes.
There you go. Yes, the Pentagon is certain there was a secondary explosion, proving that they'd hit an ISIS terrorist. Can we get that confirmed? We sure can. Here's Major General William Hank Taylor.
On Sunday, U.S. military forces conducted an unmanned over-the-horizon airstrike on a vehicle known to be an imminent ISIS-K threat. This self-defense strike successfully hit the target near Kabul Airport. Significant secondary explosions from the targeted vehicle indicated the presence of a substantial amount of explosive material. We are aware of reports of civilian casualties, and we take these reports very seriously, and we are continuing to assess the situation.
Yeah, so that U.S. military investigation was all going terribly well until the New York Times did their own. And oh dear, the government and the military had lied.
Make no mistake, no military on the face of the earth works harder to avoid civilian casualties than the United States military. And nobody wants to see innocent life taken.
Yeah, trust me, I'm a Pentagon spokesman.
As the Secretary says in the statement, we apologize and we will endeavor to learn from this horrible mistake. And to that end, he has directed a thorough review of the investigation just completed by U.S. Central Command.
Yeah, I think that means we want to figure out how we can be more successful with our fibs. But every dark cloud has its silver lining, and the silver lining in this one is that it's just been announced that right here in Queensland, Australia, we're about to start manufacturing those flying death machines. Brilliant stuff. Some Australians are going to get rich, and we'll all live happily ever after. Let's get on with it. Yeah, just a sample there of the sort of stuff that's coming up on the hit parade for our English around about the time we're in. Now, last week, we got our playwright Bill Shakespeare up to date and looking rather successful, but the big deal was seeing our Gloriana off. Oh. Listener Andrew Palmer sent a message ages ago about how we may all view Betty and the Mary Queen of Scots stuff, so this is about the right time for us to cut Betty up and see what we can make of her. She was off to a terrible start, wasn't she? Dad kills Mum. Yeah, that's pretty horrendous. Betty goes from princess to bastard. Dad moves older, depressed half-sister Mary in with poor little Betty. Betty looks to have wisely taken a bit of a low profile through her childhood, teen, and young adult years. Mary arrested her on suspicion of treason, and we know frequently you won't survive that. 25, though, she got the top job, and fortunately, a bunch of smart guys hopped straight in to support her, particularly by sidelining the hardline bishops from her first parliament. Betty had smart guys helping her out the whole of her life, but she certainly let those guys know who the fuck was in charge. The first thing everyone wanted to know was what were her religious policies. Betty certainly won the game of best religious policies in Europe. She reset religion back to Henry's Anglican Church, and that was basically the Catholic Church, minus a pope, minus the bean, plus a magic book in English. Both Popes and Bling are a total waste of money, so well done, Betty. It also had a couple of pluses, that magic book in English and the ability for churchy types to marry. Even though Betty didn't like it, you could marry. The magic book in English is a good idea. It stops the churchy types from having this mysterious power of being the only guys who know what's in the thing. Power gets exploited, so taking it away from a group of humans is a benefit. Betty was against the marriage thing, but hey, your call, individual human. Just know that your promotion prospects are gone with your wedding. Fair enough, give people a choice. Non-Anglican church followers were tolerated, not persecuted. The problem wasn't whether Betty had tolerance for non-Anglicans, it was about their actions. People who acted against the government were the ones with the problem, and those Jesuits certainly came to England with a message to disrupt the government. Same with Puritans. We know, for example, both Robert Dudley and Francis Walsingham were pretty much Puritans, but they were there for Betty and England, so great, be a Puritan, mate. By resetting the church back to Henry's Anglican thing, Betty stifled the stupid theological stuff where we get constant splits and divisions over really silly stuff like which frock should the magician wear, all that John Knox bullshit, we need to sit to get the bread without yeast and not to kneel, and all that stuff just causes trouble. I'll give Betty full marks for handling a very tricky issue that had led to a huge civil war problem in France and that nasty Inquisition in Spain and misery in the lowlands. The next big deal we all wanted to know was who would she marry? Pretty fair question. Mary's marriage to Spanish Philip had been a total fucking disaster, which we don't want to see again. For me, and I suspect for Betty, any marriage would not have worked out well for England. It certainly would have put a lot of pressure on her ability to rule, so not marrying was the right thing for her, I think. Of course, that means no heir to the big chair, which got Billy Rufus and Dick I Am the One a fail from us. But for Betty in England, the not marry was the right thing. So let's be the type of people who say rules definitely are made to be broken if the circumstances are right. It's kind of critical thinking, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Her ducking and weaving, though, caused a fair bit of heartache for Parliament and the Council, who were left to keep guessing. An earlier announcement along the lines what she eventually made, that is, I married England, would have been handy. But if she had made it early, then it's more than likely they would have just kept up pressure on her because of that need for stability that comes with an heir. As it was, they kept up pressure to name that heir until it became pretty darn apparent that it would be Jim Six. Betty never naming the guy was the best thing for her because as soon as she named an heir, the big dicks would start turning their attention to him and not Betty. The marrying England thingy also helped Betty dismantle the cult of Magic Hymen Mary to replace it with the cult of the Virgin Queen. And that's good stuff for national pride. Betty got handed the shit sandwich that was Mary Queen of Scots. Mary made that totally stupid decision to turn up in England. That was against the advice of her own loyal guys, and she really should have just gone to France and lived happily ever after. Having fucked up in Scotland, she decided it would be Betty who would pull her ass out of the fire. For Betty and the government, Mary was a highly dangerous rallying point for Catholics, both in England and in Europe. A whole lot of people would have wanted Betty out and Mary in as Queen of England. Keeping Mary banged up for 20 years and then killing her were terrible things to do, but let's face it, Scotties didn't want her back, and she was a constant danger to Betty. So, hey, the good of the many over the good of the one, and that was it for Mary. We, with the benefit of hindsight, can see it worked. Catholic tensions in England went away after Mary was dead. Well, not totally went away. There were still Jesuits being dropped into England. Betty's foreign policy ended up being a mixed bag, but for most of her life it was pretty good. She didn't quite escape the stupid foreign wars, but unlike our kings, who would most likely have mounted huge campaigns, she provided low-level support to Frenchy Huguenots and in the lowlands. Betty wasn't looking to be a mighty hero of the Protestant cause. She just wanted to make sure that the war stayed in Europe. Good stuff. Particularly some of the stuff in France, which paid for itself, using trade to offset the cost of the military support. It wasn't all great stuff, and overall she spent a lot of money. Sending Robert Dudley to the lowlands was a mistake. She should have sent a trusted military type. The Irish stuff has also cost England a bundle, and the government's nearly bankrupt. There were plenty of examples in history to show the pitfalls of running things in foreign countries. Rome had problems over and over with corrupt officials who failed to carry out orders sent by Rome. The big difference was that they could fix those problems with belting up places that rebelled and recovering their costs by reparations. But getting reparations out of a poor country like Ireland won't be happening. It's a different reason we want Ireland. It's for national security, not to make money. Betty needed guys in Ireland who could follow her orders, but they were thin on the ground. Now, Betty inherited a terrible financial situation. England was in debt, £227,000, with a rather high interest rate being applied. Our reputation was in the dunny, particularly with Henry doing all that debasing of the coin. While a lot of cash went out in stupid foreign wars, Betty herself was very careful on expenditure. England will be deeper in debt when she dies, but we certainly have avoided being invaded. The trouble is Betty failed on any sort of economic reform. England was operating on outdated policies. The advice she got from Brainiac money man Thomas Gresham was not to borrow overseas. That's a lot to do with optics. We want to project an image that we're financially independent of bankers in Antwerp or Florence or anywhere else. Tom Gresham was that guy who founded the Royal Exchange, our first shopping mall. That will do more for the English economy than what Betty did. He said that Betty surely would need to borrow money, but borrow it in England. To do this, you need to review the usury laws, and that then would be a good start to further economic reform. Good advice, and 16 years later, Betty is debt-free. 10 years after that, Betty had a surplus of £300,000. Great, and a marvellous time for further economic reform, but that won't happen. As we know, Betty was also not one for raising big fat taxes. Her reasoning was that taxes might turn people against her and that she'd be forced to make concessions to Parliament. The taxes she did raise were often voluntary. You assess your own situation and pay what you think is right to the government. There will of course be problems out and around the place with local authorities raising these taxes then sending cash to London. And it's hard to believe that various people weren't popping their sticky fingers into the loot along the way. What she needed was an efficient bureaucracy, like something run by a Tom Cromwell, but she didn't get one. I'm only guessing, but Betty may have seen these guys as expenditure items to be avoided. But an efficient bureaucracy can bring in more money than it costs over and over. We also have the impact of natural disasters like bad seasons that happen and they bankrupt the economy. There was also a lot of support for maintaining those out-of-date economic policies. That would be rich people supporting them. It helps them get richer. The common smellies who Betty constantly said she was supporting didn't do that well during Betty's reign. Wages went down while the cost of food went up. The already huge gap between rich and poor is just a bit bigger after her time in the big job. Betty gets full marks for her support of the arts, of course, and we in the future can enjoy the works created during her reign and with her support. Now, Betty herself is a funny old thing. On the one hand, she was rather witty and did that winking thing, like saying, "Francis Drake, don't you dare attack Spanish ships," while giving him a wink. On the other hand, everybody had to kneel in her presence. Even if she was walking by, you just had to kneel. I guess that's constantly reminding people who is the boss, and that's probably not that bad if you happen to be female. Now, was it a golden age? Your pick as usual. We'll get Betty nicely buried soon, but we have a new boy for the silly hat. And where I am in space-time, I can smell smoke, so I'm just going to duck off for a tick. I'll be back before you know it.
Said someday you'll find all who love are blind. Oh, when your heart's on fire, you must be alive. Smoke gets in your eyes.
Just just a little kiddie bushfire down the road from us. The authorities are on the case and the weather's okay, so it shouldn't be much of a problem. Just a bit smelly. Now, what were we up to? James 1 and 6, that's him. 1 of England and 6 of Scotland. Now, let's just remind ourselves of his illustrious ancestors, the first five Jims. We got the Stuarts in Scotland through Robert Bruce's sister Marjorie, who gave us two Roberts, both duds, before we got to the Jims. One was a second son, but his older brother was murdered by his uncle, making Jim the Prince of Ayr. Things were dodgy as usual in Scotland, so Jim was sent to France. Ran smack into an English ship, and Jim went into the custody of Henry IV for 18 years. His dad had died a month after Jim was captured, him, making him the uncrowned King of Scotland at age 12. Got back to Scotland when he was 30 to start his glorious reign of 11 years, but the Scottish saw him as a total turd, so he was murdered while escaping through a sewer. In comes 7-year-old Jim II, who decided he liked cannon. Blew himself up age 29, so bring on 8-year-old Jim III. He'll live to 36 before Dad Killer King Jim IV will do him in a battle. 15-year-old Dad Killer King Jim IV then married Margaret Tudor, and wasn't that all fun and giggles. At age 40, he'll face Catherine of Aragon's English troops at Flodden, and goodbye Dad Killer. Maybe King Jim V will marry Mary of Guise and get done over big time at Solway Moss and just die. That left us with baby Mary, Queen of Scots, who can marry the equally useless Lord Darnley and give us baby King Jim VI. You impressed with this guy's DNA so far? Okay, come on down, King Jim 1 and 6, Hammer of the Witches. Yeah, he can belt up girlies. We'll get to that. We'd better have his backstory. Born 19th of June 1566, so he's about 37 right now. Back to his birth, and the Scotties will do a bit of the celebration of a new heir to the big chair, but it's not all fun, fun, fun. Mary had seen the murder of Rizzio a couple of months earlier, and for a lot of Scottish nobles, the writing's on the wall. Mary must go, so we'd all like control of the baby heir. Baby Jim is also the only heir for the English Tudors, and that's through both parents. Both Mary and Darnley were descendants of Henry VII. Seven had that daughter, Margaret Tudor, who married Dad Killer King Jim IV, who is Mary's granddad. Margaret also had that daughter, Margaret Douglas, mum of Darnley. Baby Jim VI then is rather a major player for both England and Scotland. Should have been born in Holyrood Palace, but things were a bit too dodgy for that, so Mary was in the safety of Edinburgh Castle for the birth. But Jim is also immediately a problem. Will Mary baptise him as Catholic or Protestant? Terribly important problem. Worse, there's plenty of people who wish this kid had never been born, so they could have taken over the big chair. That included his own dad, who said, "Nah, Jim's a bastard. Rizzio is his real dad." Who cares about Darnley, though? He was stuffed. He had syphilis and he couldn't stay sober. Darnley will manage to work out that calling Jim a bastard was against his own interest, so he changed his tune. But that might haunt baby Jim for a while. The mob will start calling him the son of Signor Davy, that is, David Rizzio. Even now, King Henri IV will call him Solomon, son of David, who plays on the harp. Another reference to him being a bastard. There's also rumours that baby Jim had died at birth and Mary had swapped him for another baby. Fast forward to 1830... I know that's a long time in the future, but fast forward to 1830, and bugger me backwards, a baby skeleton will be found in a wall of the castle's banqueting hall, really firing that rumour back up. Fair enough, this thing was wrapped in a cloth of gold with the letter J embroidered on it. Ooh, spooky and mysterious, I can hear you say, but let's you and I pop on our thinking caps for a tick. Where is this stuff now? Nowhere. The cloth of gold disappeared after some people said they saw it. Yeah, some people. A bunch of soldiers took bits of bones as souvenirs. We don't know where this stuff is or whether it even existed. History hoaxes are a fun game, obviously, given that so many people create them. Other baby and kitty skeletons have been found near the Queen's apartments in the castle, but these actually exist, and testing showed they predate the building. They were from a very old abbey that was there even before we had kings and queens there. If we turn to our baby portraits, then you can see this kitty took after his dad, Darnley. Baby Jim will be off to Stirling Castle for a baptism. The last great Catholic ceremony in Scotland. He'll be christened Charles James after Bradley King Chuck of France and his illustrious Jim ancestors. Only variance in the ceremony was that Mary refused to allow the Archie to do the spitting on the baby because the Archie was well advanced with syphilis. Okay, ceremony over and well done, Charles James, Prince and Steward of Scotland, Duke of Rossay, Earl of Carrick, Lord of the Isles and Baron of Renfrew. Party time! Wake up, Will. Protestant Lord's not attending. Bring in fucking Catholic Archies. We're not going to come. Frenchy ambassadors claim English ambassadors got better treatment. English ambassadors claim Scotties insulted them. Darnley was a no-show. Who cares? He hasn't got any friends at all. 8 months after Jim's birth and his dear old dad, Darnley can be murdered. Bothwell can kidnap Mary and rape her until she says yes to his very romantic marriage proposal. It's political insanity. In come the Protestant lords to capture Mary and let Bothwell run away. He can head off to his state in a very nasty slammer and death. But he's got a nephew that'll turn up. Mary's off to her island slammer, escape to England and eventual execution. That's not about them, it's about baby Jim. 29th of July 1567, and just after his first birthday, Prince Jim will become a King Jim VI. Worst attended coronation in Scotty history. About a tenth of the nobility only will turn up. English will boycott it. Scotties will insist that the Charles name be dropped. This kiddie's going to be a Jim, not some fucking Chuck, stupid Frenchy name. It's not even the right place, it's just a parish church. Sermon delivered by John Knox. Ho hum, let's go to sleep. What a fucker he was. Chronicles 23:20-21, and he took the captains of hundreds and the nobles and the governors of the people and all the people of the land and brought down the king from the house of the Lord. And they came through the high gate to the king's house and set the king upon the throne of the kingdom. And all the people of the land rejoiced and the city was quiet after that they had slain Alphonse with the sword. So the king in this chronicle is a baby, and Althea, slain of the sword, was his mum. Yeah, that's a nice story, isn't it, to tell a poor little baby. God loves you, always has. God loves you, always will. And though you've wandered far away from home, his arms are open still. God loves you. Unless you're Mary Queen of Scots, in which case it'd be nice if somebody would pop a sword in her. James Douglas, Earl of Morton, will read out the charter for baby Jim, the one about how he will respect the lovable laws. Morton was the fucker in chief who brought Mary down by murder and so on. Just the right guy to talk about abiding by the law. He can be Chancellor in the Regency. Jim isn't off to a great start, but he will be off to live with the Earl of Mar, John Erskine, one of those rare Scotty nobles that people like or at least respect. John will be dead in 5 years, so his brother likewise liked and respected will take over. Erskine's missus will be a stern and remote guardian, not having a lot to do with the kitty. John Knox calls her a sweet titbit for the devil's mouth, so she might not be all that bad. Jim's household, like his coronation, will be modest. For you and I, my dear listener, it would be over the top, but for a baby king, it's not a big deal at all. Jim, though, will be comfy, and a lot of people will be looking after him. They'll be around for some years, providing a bit of stability for the kitty. Jim's going to be raised with the idea that he's heir to the English big chair, but first and foremost, mate, you're a Scotty. Remember, the English are foreigners and rather hard fuckers. But you are the guy who will unite the two kingdoms so we can all live happily ever after. By fall, Jim will have tutors, brainiacs. But what Jim really needs is probably early learning teachers, and these guys aren't that. Jim will prove to be excitable, nervous, and a bit overstrung. He doesn't need uni-level teachers right now, but that's what he's got. Worse, one of these brainiacs is a particularly grumpy old man. He took the job for cash and prestige, but the last thing he wants is a kiddie interfering with his important academic work. He'll vent on the poor little kiddie. Worse, he had taught Kitty Mary, Queen of Scots, so he'll be telling Jim that his mum was totally useless. Not what he said at the time, no. When he was teaching Mary, Queen of Scots, Mary was just terrific. Now she is that bloody woman and a poisoning witch. He'll write a book, Detection of the Doings of Mary, Queen of Scots. That puts John Knox's stuff to shame. And he'll also be the guy who ends up saying, yes, the writing in the bullshit casket letters is definitely Mary's. There will be beatings for Jim. On one occasion, the Countess will intervene. He will say, Madam, I whipped his ass, now you may kiss it. Jim will say, much later in his life, that he was pretty bloody scared of this guy. Our man will later write, when Jim's 13, the rights of the Crown of Scotland. This turns the monarchy on its head. Kings are not specially picked by God, but by the people. It's not the people who are obliged to the king, it's the king who is obliged to the people. Yeah, Jim will eventually have that burned and say, wrong, 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 wrong. I was hand-picked by God and the people are here for my benefit. Even so, grown-up Jim will boast about the good education this guy gave him. And it's true, he did get a good education. Thing is, he was a mixed bag as humans are. At the heart of it, this old boy was a scholar, seeking the truth always. Now, Jim's other teacher was pretty much the opposite of the old boy. He's young and into praise and encouragement. He'll keep working for Jim in various roles for years. Jim will be pretty bright, and some of that will show up in his quick wit, short temper, and sarcasm. The Earl of Mar will be speaking French to him. Jim will say, I can hardly understand a word you're saying. You can't speak Frenchy and you can hardly speak Scotty. His kind tutor will suggest he shouldn't lose his temper so easily. Fine, says Jim. I'll have the lion taken off my coat of arms and replace it with a sheep. What's missing from this kiddie's early years are women. It's really only Lady Ma who isn't that interested in him and can be quite harsh. He'll grow up constantly wanting affection. He can also get a lesson in his political situation. He's only king because of the poor choices Mary had made. Even then, he is not secure as a king because Mary won't abdicate as queen. She's a threat to his position. Mary's letters also don't always get through to him. If she writes, for example, to my darling Charles James, Prince of Scotland, then it will be removed. He's King Jim, not Charles or Prince, according to the Scotties, so yeah, none of this Prince Charles stuff. By the time he's four, Scottish Parliament will decide no direct letters from Mary to Jim. They all have to come to Parliament first, and will decide whether to forward them on or not. He'll be a good student, but sadly get on that bloody Calvinism stuff. That John Calvin was combining magic stuff with reason and logic, and that just doesn't work. But for Calvin, it led to the absolute truth. Once you find yourself at the absolute truth, then that gets lodged in your brain and nothing will shift it. And the problem with that is that there's no such thing as absolute truth, but your brain will reject anything else. That will lead James to totally reject Catholicism. Jim could also be a bit of a smart-ass. A tutor will punish him by saying, well, you were supposed to have a nice time studying the 119th Psalm, but you've been naughty, so I'm not going to let you study that psalm now. James will reply by just quoting the psalm. He had a terrific memory and just absorbed books. By 16, he will know pretty much all Scotty history, plus lots of foreign histories as well. He'll be well noted for his memory, wit and languages. He will, of course, know much of the magical book and be rather good translator. Side note here, it's this guy's translation of the magic book that was around when I was a kiddie. It was still the official book of magic after all those years. His tutors also need to train him to be a king. Jim was rubber stamping documents, so his grumpy old tutor will bring him a pile of papers saying these all need signing and Jim will sign. Next day, tutor will say, "Hey Jim, I'm the King of Scotland." "What the fuck are you on about?" asks Jim. Tutor hands him a document and says, "Here's the letter you signed, handing the kingdom over to me." Handy lesson right there for King Jim. Jim will have a couple of young guys to keep him company and will learn the horse riding and hawking and hunting stuff. And he loved it. Not all champagne and reefers, of course. The politics go on, with regents coming and going, and mainly the going by being killed. His granddad, Earl of Lennox, we know, was the one who died. His death was actually at Jim's house. Jim will grow up being rather scared that someone might just come for him. He'll also know and mention frequently that he was a threat, even when still inside of Mary, with that Rizzio thing. After Lennox's death, security was ramped up, bars on the windows and armed guards when he went out. It will be noted that Teen King Jim isn't sleeping well. It's all a worry. His first crack at ruling was when he was 12, which is actually too young for the Scotties. But a bunch of nobles led by the Earl of Athol rebelling against Regent Morton will say, "Oi, you rule, Jim, with us to support you." In come Morton's hard men to Jim's house and he can hear belting just outside his door. His playmate, the young Erskine, will die in this. Oh. Morton will be ramping up for civil war. Won't happen, but he is bribing lots of Scotties to avoid that. It's tense, plus Mary is still plotting, wanting him kidnapped and sent to France type stuff. But he will stop all that. Civil war avoided, but there's murders going on among the nobles. Earl of Athol will go to the Earl of Morton for a feast. Before you know it, he's feeling rather unwell and will die. Some guys will say Morton done it, poison. Morton will have them hanged. Nobles will force a post-mortem. In comes Dr. Preston to open up Athol and says, no poison here. And look, I'll prove it to you. He will lick, now this is why you don't want to be a doctor, he will lick Athol's stomach and promptly die. Jim's run at being the ruling king aged 12 has ended. Jim will hit 13 and Scotty nobles have to face the facts that he'll be running the show pretty soon. So Jim will head off to Edinburgh for the magnificent welcome. His council are made up of Scotty nobles who are of course divided. Plus we need a replacement for the murdered Athol. Both sides want someone who is neutral. Oh yeah, that's pretty tricky. In Scotland, yeah, neutral. Come on home from France, Esme Stuart. He can both be neutral on the council and take that vacant Earl of Lennox gig, thwarting the plans of Bess of Hardwick for a granddaughter Arbella. He's related to Jim, so we might overlook that he's Catholic, way more Frenchy than Scotty, and's got rather loose morals in the banging department. Esme was a first cousin to Jim's dad, Lord Darnley, the dickhead. Esme was in with the De Guise mob in France. Theoretically, he's here to give Jim a noble who is family, but he sees his mission as promoting France in Scotland, get Mary ruling again, and make Catholic great again. Esme is ambitious and without any scruples. He will be into plenty of intrigue, giving zero fucks about anyone other than himself. First thing he'll do is smartly announce his conversion to the Protestant thingy, or Presbyterian. Mary had given him 40,000 pieces of gold to help her. And in return, she will get no help at all from Esme. Esme won't be promoting Frenchy interests either. He's decided he just wants to cultivate Jim so that Esme can get more. Speaking of making Catholic great again in Scotland, yeah, no chance really. The leaders of the Reformed Church in Scotland have decided on that old run things with an iron fist plan. It's those lords of the congregation mob. Zero tolerance. Catholics, of course, didn't like these hard men churchy types, but then they were turning off their own flock as well. Of course, a bunch of religious types will also fight amongst themselves. Sure to do it. Set or kneel for the bread without yeast type of shit. Result is their organisation was getting a bit weak, so in came the nobles to knock off their lands and income, so now they're a bit weak and also broke. Worse is that who wants to work for this bunch of fuckers? The answer to that, my dear listener, is 289 magicians for the over 1,000 parishes. Yeah, we can't get people to come and work for us. We're too cunty. The nobles can also see they need to keep the English happy, and more reform ain't going to do that. On top of all that, we can see what's happening in France with religious wars, and we certainly don't want that shit. There won't be any push for anyone to make Catholic great again. Back to young Esme Stewart, and here he is. Young, dashing, banger of hot chicks. The total opposite of hard man Morton, who is looking at Jim as a nice teenage puppet. Morton's a party pooper, while Esme is fun, fun, fun. He's also providing a different sort of education to Jim. Courtly behaviour and culture. He's a breath of fresh air. He'll even get the council to fund four guys to play violin at court. Now James, as a teenager, was physically weak, slack on manners, and he shambles rather than walks. He had had a dose of smallpox, but fortunately missed out on the scars, so was considered good-looking. Esme Stewart is well-built and has excellent manners. He can't speak Scotty and won't be learning it, but he'll start charming some of those gruff old Scotty nobles. Jim will be giving him nice estates and, of course, make him Earl of Lennox. More castles, and in a short time Esme will be Lord Chamberlain, then First Gentleman of the Bedchamber, and after about a year he'll be promoted to Duke of Lennox. Esme and Jim are very close. As Esme is going up, Morton is going down. Churchy types are, of course, don't like Esme. Too Catholic, wears fancy clothes and enjoys the terrible music stuff. Oh, no. Jim will now start wearing fancy clothes too. Morton is being sidelined, so he will retire to his estates to be angry. Now, Esme turning Protestant will be seen for what it is, a political move. But he is worried that Esme will turn Scotland back to a Frenchy ally. That will be her first hint that Jim would be her heir. She will also warn Jim to fear for his ambition, rather than to comfort and delight his affection. She also encouraged Morton to lay violent hands on Esme. Ooh. Jim will be hunting when he hears that Morton is planning to kidnap him. Off he goes to Stirling Castle immediately. Now Jim at this stage has no permanent guard of hard men. Too expensive and he's broke. But Morton won't be doing any kidnapping. Nobody likes him. He's got zero support. He also had two prophecies, one by an actor and one by a lady of the night, that the king would be his undoing. Not the most difficult prediction, really, because it's time to stitch up Morton. Esme will come up with a plan to stitch Morton up for Darnley's murder. It will be James Stewart, brother-in-law of John Knox, who Esme selects to get the job done. Esme will make him captain of the king's guard. Now this guy has a nice big ego and he's very ambitious. Lots of people, of course, will hate him for that. Jim will go hunting with Morton and be saying all nice lovely things. You are my father because only you have reared me and I shall surely protect you from your enemies. That will get Morton to come to a privy council meeting. In burst James Stewart to point at Morton saying he was in on the Darnley murder. Uproar, arrest, trial, next day execution. At his execution, he will confess he knew about the murder, but it was Bothwell who'd done it. Now, let's change things a bit. It's embarrassing for our Betty, because she's holding Mary, who had been found neither guilty nor innocent of Darnley's murder. But this confession makes Mary pretty bloody innocent. Betty has sent 2,000 hard men to the border to see if they could save Morton. Scotty's response was a pistol shot through the English ambassador's window. Jim is standing up to Betty. Betty will respond with insults. The false Scotch urchin, double-dealing arsehole. Yeah, well, she said double-dealing, I put in arsehole. And the double-dealing thing's fair enough. taught by Esme, who will now be talking up the absolute rule of kings, and that the reformers may be more like the seditious Huguenots of France. Perhaps bagging the churchy types were fair enough also. Churchy types have had a bit of time to sort themselves out, and they're back on the rise. Oddly enough, we'll get a smart cookie in this who is suggesting separation of church and state. Hey, Jim, you run the government, we'll stay out of that, and we'll run the church and you stay out of that. Well, not stay right out. Still come to the magic shows, but we'll be in charge of the magic stuff. Sounds good, but at the same time, they're saying the king needs to listen to churchy types' advice. They need to teach the king who needs to hear and obey. So, yeah, the separation of church and state idea in reality was a one-way street. The Scotty's also going all Calvinistic. All magicians are equal. No bishops or archies, thanks. Now that's problematic for a king who exercises control through those bishops and archies. Jim, being rather bright, can see where that's headed. If we get rid of bishops and archies, then how long before we get rid of nobles and, oh, kings? This equality stuff sucks bigly. We don't like it. Jim's also warmed to Mary a bit following the arrival of Esme. The big sticking point is that Mary is refusing to recognise the transfer of the silly hat to Jim. But hey, Jim has stitched up Wharton, so she will now propose that association idea. Joint rule. And what's in this for Jim? Catholic rulers of Europe would now recognise him, I suppose. They don't at the moment, but does Jim care? Nah. Mary also sees her guys getting pardoned and people can go back to the Catholic magic shows and all that. Yeah, not going well, but Mary also wants to have a final sign-off on all decisions. And just one more tiny little thing. Jim should also go back to the Catholic magic shows. Don't think she thought that through. That would make Betty an instant enemy of Scotland while Mary's in custody. Typical Mary plan then. Jim will write her nice little letters, just trivial stuff, and always sign off as James Rex. Yeah, he's the king. Jim, of course, is changing. His writing condemns the use of naughty words, but he's certainly using them free and fast himself. Churchy types will pull him up on this, but he'll just say, oh, I thank you, and laugh at them. And he's skipping some of the magic shows. Oh, dear. And he's getting entertainments on the Sabbath. Worse, bawdy entertainments. Is he the devil?
Down to Georgia, he was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, boy, let me tell you what, I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too, and if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul because I think I'm better than you. The boy said, my name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet, you're gonna regret, cause I'm the best as ever been. Johnny, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell's broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul.
'78 there, and the Charlie Daniels band, The Devil Went Down to Georgia. Shouldn't have done it, devil. You're gonna get done. It's Jim Esme, now the Duke of Lennox, and James Stewart, who is suddenly the Earl of Arran, being three lads out for laughs. James Stewart had a missus at court who is hot to trot. Likes a bit of the dick action. She'd divorced her first man on grounds of impotency. He couldn't get it up, she reckoned. Plus, she was pregnant at the time, thanks to James Stewart. He's okay with his missus playing up for the boys, but he may have missed the mark. Jim might have the hots for Esme. Yeah. Churchy types have said the boy lover's gone way too far, and Esme has drawn Jim into carnal lust. It's not only churchy guys. Nobles are also writing about the two lads entering into quiet purposes. That's a Scotty thing at the time for banging. He's entering into quiet purposes. I like it. Of course, it's one of those we'll never know things, but Jim will be totally against gays, as the king. He'll instruct judges that they must be rigid in dealing with these horrible crimes and that sodomy is unforgivable. But getting back to Jim now, the death of Morton has let him off the leash. Esme has Frenchies in his entourage, and these guys are way more fun than Scotty's. It's a permanent party, with Jim leaving the boring stuff like governing to Esme and James Stewart. That can't last. Rumour is out about the Mary proposal for Jim to turn Catholic and then the jointly rule thing. Anti-Catholic hysteria is back and we're all looking at Esme. Sure, he said he'd turn Protestant, but has he really? Worse for Esme, the word is also out in Europe. The government is also bringing in Mary supporters back to power. Back when Mary was asking Betty to name her a successor, Betty pointed out nice and bluntly that would make Mary a champion for Betty's enemies and bring about Betty's downfall. With Jim's actions in Scotland, Betty is thinking about him the same way now as she thought about Mary. Things aren't going well for the three lads in Scotland, so Esme will come up with the brilliant plan to remove Betty. Fucking idiot. Let's do it, he says. You turn Catholic, then get the Catholic lords to join you in freeing your mum, then English Catholics will join us for a total takeover. Now, it's not only in England that the Jesuits are operating, they're in Scotland to convert Jim. And when he says no, they start plotting. Kidnapping and a forced conversion is their stupid plan. More and more Scotties are developing feelings of hatred for Esme. He's starting to think he might be murdered any day now. Part of Esme's problem, also, is that James Stewart has pushed him aside to become Jim's number one BFF. Esme is pretty and fun, while James Stewart is handsome and strong. So, of course, Esme and James will have a falling out. So, who will Jim pick to come to the Christmas bash? Esme. Of course, James Stewart will be brought in to do the kiss and make-up thing. Esme will be scheming with both Mary and Spain. He seems to have missed the bit where Spain and France aren't friended on Facebook anymore. Nor does he seem to get the bit that Jim won't be going Catholic or sharing power with his mum. And he does know what Scotty nobles are like, or the Scotty church. It's dangerous to play with politics in Scotland, Esme. But all Esme can see in this is that he could get more money. And here comes his first money grab. Catholic churchy type Robert Montgomery, or really pretty darn ordinary churchy type, will be made Archie of Glasgow. Robert had been very vocal about the churchy lords of the congregation in a very negative way. Churchy lords didn't like this guy at all, and here he is going into a top job with Esme doing a nice deal to get lots of the cash from that archbishopric. Churchy types are outraged. They'll be giving Jim a total ear-bashing, and it's preaching about resisting the tyranny of teen kings who wish to pull the crown off Christ's head and wring the sceptre out of his hand. Yeah, it's all about the money, really, as usual. Worse, one of the geezer's men will turn up for a chat. A churchy guy meeting with him will do his nut. Oh, the geezer's man is the devil's messenger. Oh, thought the devil was in Georgia, but anyway. And you, Jim, absolutely cannot marry some Frenchy Catholic chick, even if she's a hottie. You've been a naughty kiddie, now you must atone. Yeah, look, the king's 16 now. That's an age where you don't want to be called a naughty kiddie. Jim isn't standing up to a red-hot churchy type, so he'll just concede on all points. The money grabbed by Esme has united a bunch of disgruntled nobles. It's now an organised bunch of guys coming after him. What was needed was a moment in time when Jim and Esme were separated. Out goes Jim for a hunt, while Esme stays home. Well, there you go, they're separated. And in comes the Earl of Gowrie to say, hey Jim, why not stay at my house for a day or two? Now Jim was smart, he could see something's up. Well, okay, why not? Next day in comes the Earl of Mar, so the two earls can give Jim an earful about bad shit happening. Jim will boo-hoo-hoo and look to leave, but the Earl of Gowrie will block his way, saying, Better that the bairns should weep than bearded men. Yeah, yeah, you're a kiddie still, Jim, so you have a good cry, just as long as the men don't have to. Hang in there, Jim, because here comes James Stewart, handsome, brave and strong to rescue you. And he'll be arrested. Esme's a bit smarter. He's holed up in Dumbarton, patiently waiting for an opportunity to spring Jim. Plus, of course, he's got to come up with a cunning plan. Step one, open up a communication channel. Here, ordinary type, take this top secret message to Jim and don't let anyone else see it. That letter will have to be delivered while Jim's on the dunny. It's his only private space except for ordinary types delivering top secret messages, of course. What's your reply to Esme? Asked the ordinary type. Don't send me any more messages. It's way too fucking dangerous. Doesn't matter, really. Jim will be given a document to sign that says he is a free king and Esme needs to fuck off out of Scotland, and that the Scotty Church can make its own decisions. Esme will now show us that he's way smarter than lots of our characters have been, and he will actually fuck off out of Scotland. Jim had been forced to write that Esme was disloyal and inconstant. Esme will write a very sweet reply saying, no way, mate, but lots of flowery words. Jim will write a poetic lament for his lost love. Esme won't live long enough to read it. Dysentery and gonorrhea. As a final act of fidelity to Jim, Esme will refuse the last rite, saying, I'm a Protestant, mate, and do me a solid favour by cutting out my dead heart to send it to Jim as a nice present. And with that, King Jim's first love is dead. Now, my dear listener, you, like me, might be a bit surprised by this event. We've had a kidnapped king forced to tell his boyfriend to go, and the boyfriend then going, and nobody got killed. Nobody at all. Well played all sides, but still a bit of trauma for the teen king. His power might not be absolute after all. Worse, he's done what he's been told to do, but they aren't letting him out yet. A dinner, and Jim will propose a toast to Esme. Scotty nobles will be silent. Jim will take a slug of wine and toss the rest over his shoulder. That's the sort of thing Mary would have done. Like Mary, he will be consumed with a couple of objectives. First objective, escape. Second objective, oh dear, revenge. Problem for the Scotty nobles, who have decided that they should be running the place, is that Jim has cooperated with their demand for Esme removal, and they need his royal authority to do that ruling. Worse, these nobles were pro-English and expected Betty's support. But we know Betty doesn't support things like abducting kings. That's bad. In any case, Jim had got in first, getting a letter to Betty saying, I would be grateful to follow your extremely brilliant advice on running Scotland. Keeping a king is also an expensive enterprise, and the nobles all thought Betty would stump up the cash for that. They really don't know at all, do they? Betty will then give him a bit of a kick in the nuts by saying, hey, that plan for Mary's joint rule isn't a bad idea. The last thing these guys want back in Scotland is Mary. Through all this, Jim's also been chatting with French ambassadors. I've got two eyes, two ears and two hands, but only one heart, and that heart is with the Frenchies. Our nobles have got no support. Plus, French ambassadors are now trying to rally nobles who don't like the abductor mob. Jim will also chip in by ending the temper tantrums and saying, hey, I actually like it here. And sure, Esme was a bit of a dick now that I think about it. He's playing them. Oh, I wouldn't mind popping out for a bit of a hunt, says Jim. And our Scotty nobles, lulled into a false state of security, will say, sure, lad, go and kill defenceless animals. All good fun, we get it. The nobles aren't totally stupid, they're out with him. In comes a message from his great uncle, the Earl of March. Hey Jim, you're not too far from my place. Come on over, I'm getting a big old barbecue going. That's a change in plans, but okay. Jim will be very cool about it all. No mad dash going on here. He'll just wander around, taking his time, bit of hawking here and a bit of hawking there. But he's slowly moving away from the main group, and then it's, well, where is the lad? He's made it all the way to his great uncle's castle. That's where he is. big bunch of Jim supporters are in the castle, and in come the abductor nobles. It's tense. Both sides want to kill the other, but neither side want to be the first to start the hitting. That would make them the bad guys, and we all want to be the good guys. Tension mounts and mounts, and the leader of the abductors will drop to his knees and ask for a pardon. Jim can now rip it up the guy, but then he'll give him the pardon in the end. Ah, now we can have a feast. Next morning, Jim will call a lot of men for a little chat. Now I'm free, I'll be ruling as a universal king over you all in my own right, and we'll all be good friends, and that will work because I'll be impartial to everyone, and I shall surely listen to your wise counsel, but at the end of the day, the decisions will be mine and mine alone. And there you go. Jim has freed himself from his boyhood tutors, the various regents, and his first big role model, Esme. He's a big grown-up king and an absolute king. The reliable Francis Walsingham will confirm this to Betty, saying he surely is the king of the Scotties. But he's dissembling both with God and man, who, with a kind of jollity, said he was an absolute king. Yeah, Jim might be absolute, but he still needs a fully grown man to hang around, and James Stewart can come back out of custody. Great, Jim's still not into the routine of government, so James Stewart can do all that. Jim can now be 18, and the Frenchy ambassador will write, "I consider the young king too lazy and thoughtless about business, too devoted to his pleasures, especially to hunting, leaving his affairs to be managed by the Earl of Arran." Jim's saying excessive work makes him ill, but nothing important happens without him knowing about it. Pretty right, given that he certainly sees the value of spies to keep tabs on his counsellors. Also, to be fair to Jim, it seems he could multitask, so when he did work, he got through stuff pretty darn quick. Jim is thinking that he's definitely better than other people, and that's a bad thing. While the Earl of Arran, James Stewart, is doing the mundane running of the government, Jim is off with poets and writers. Going well, and Jim can play. Not going well, James Stewart is proving to be unpopular. Jim will make him Chancellor. James Stewart isn't acting like Esme, though. Esme was looking at Jim as a puppet, while James is looking at Jim as his boss. He's giving the nobles nothing concrete enough for them to act on. Revenge time. Chief abductor of the king, William Ruthven, Earl of Gowrie, will find 100 hard men outside his bedroom window at 3 a.m. That's not a good sign. He will accompany these gentlemen to the lock-up in Stirling Castle. Trial, and the charges will include witchcraft and conferring with sorcerers. Jim does like that stuff. 3rd of May, 1584, and head off for treason. His stuff can be split up among Jim's mates, but the Earl's kiddies will get the Earl title back in a couple of years. Won't help that kiddie who was 7 when his dad copped it. That gives him 6 years to live until he catches a nasty dose of mysterious circumstances. Oh no, say the Scotty nobles, King Jim has gone all revenge mode. Some will get the fuck out and go to England. Others will hang around to be financially ruined. That seems to be thanks to James Stewart's rather greedy missus. She's also currently hating on churchy types who in turn are calling her a witch. It's about to become very dangerous to be called a witch. James Stewart will now start getting involved in revenge, and more nobles are nicking off to Berwick over the border. Time for Jim to get the churchy types in. Here they are, and Jim will just stare at them, looking angry. 15 minutes of that, then he'll leave. They can hang around for a while, then they'll get a message. Go to his cabinet room. "No king in Europe would suffer what I have suffered, and it will be me who picks my mates. I am the Catholic King of Scotland." Oh. What are y'all saying? One of the lords will explain. Jim's using the term Catholic to mean he's the universal ruler of Scotland, not that he's a Catholic himself. Then quote the 10th psalm. Nasty bit of work there. "He shall judge among the heathen. He shall fill the places with the dead bodies. He shall wound the heads over many countries." Jim will say, "I'll not listen to any more of your words, but I shall certainly be watching what you do. If your deeds don't match up with your peace, love and levels message, then watch the fuck out." Whereas, of course, a couple of churchy types who have been slagging off at the government in their sermons will refuse a summons to the council. It was them bagging the idea of the two kingdoms, church and state. We all know it's just the church and the church should run everything. Then, oh dear, they called him God's silly vassal. The king has perverted the laws of God and man. They'll run away to England. Jim will respond with the black axe. That makes Jim the supreme head of the church in Scotland. See, dickhead churchy types, you should have worked with moderate Mary. No ecclesiastical courts or meetings of the Lords of Congregation without royal approval. And then the real kick in the nuts. The authority of bishops is confirmed. That's the filthy Catholics. They're now more important than the Presbyterians. Affairs of state are for Jim only, and there's to be no bagging him or his policies in sermons. Penalty will be, have your head shaved. Oh, the humiliation. Better than having a dwarf, I suppose. Worse and worse, James Stewart, with the King's full support, will resume talks with European powers. Some help would be nice. Sir Francis Walsingham will point out to Jim that Scotland is piss weak and insignificant, and that teen kings frequently find their silly hats taken away. Jim will write to the Duke de Guise, saying, great plan to spring my mum out of the slammer, I'm in. He'll invite Spanish Phil to friend him on Facebook and even write to the big Papa Pope saying, hey, you support me, and I may be able to satisfy you on what you want in Scotland. He's playing with fire, that Jim. In comes Patrick Gray to be a gentleman of the Privy Chamber and Master of the King's Wardrobe. He actually works for Mary, or so she thinks, but he's given up on a Catholic invasion of England. Now, as for the international support, well, de Guise have got his own problems. Big Papa Pope is looking at lots of T's and C's, and Spanish Phil's wishy-washy. Even if Phil knocked Betty over, he would hardly be likely to put a teen Scotty Protestant on the big English chair. Patrick Gray, then, is Jim's man, not Mary's. He thinks Mary's going nowhere, so will tell Jim, hey mate, your best bet is with Betty. Now Jim can see this. Mary's European dalliances make her unfit for both Scotland and England. Even so, he's telling Mary's supporters that he's totally with his mum. He will even swear an oath to one of these guys that he would support Mary unconditionally. They can see he's full of shit. This guy, though, will send a letter to Mary saying, Jim is surely on your team. He'll send another letter to his brother-in-law, Mary's secretary, saying, that other letter was crap. Here's the real situation, but don't tell Mary. He never asks anything, whether she's healthy or if her conditions are okay. He doesn't want to know anything about her at all. I'm sure he loves her, but he just doesn't care much. And that's where we'll leave it this week, with Jim being a naughty son.
Her cousin's friend, his testicles became swollen.
I want to interview the balls.
His testicles get like that.
So here's the point that he's making.
His testicles became swollen.
You had a really good sex party?
His testicles get like that.
Nicki Minaj's cousin's friend's balls.
He has swollen testicles.
Orchitis is the term.
COVID vaccines do not cause swollen testicles. Are you calling Nicki Minaj a liar?
This stuff caused weather. It was Pfizer.
We offered a call with Nicki Minaj. I'll circle back on that one.
Testicles make like that.
Swollen testicles.
Swollen genitals.
Swelling to his genitals.
Just a little bit of the Remix Brothers there with Swollen Balls to get us into some historical fiction. I've had two shots of AstraZeneca. No swelling of the balls. Dick didn't get bigger. Very dull, really. But it's not about big balls. It's about Peter Gibbons, author of Viking Blood and Blade. This guy knows how to write a ripping yarn, and this particular ripping yarn might have an underlying message for us. We're with the great heathen army invading England, and we've got a young guy, of course, a young guy, who, it turns out, really knows his stuff, and he's looking to become a mighty hero. And you'll find out along the way that perhaps becoming a mighty hero's not the greatest thing after all. I really enjoyed it. It's a bit of a page-turner, I found. So, Peter Gibbons, Viking Blood and Blade, if you like ripping yarns, get into it. But for us, it's just a matter of what we go out with. And, of course, the 80 Years' War over in the Lowlands is on an extended truce at the moment. Only because Spanish Phil's running out of cash again. He'll be back. He can't help himself. Well, I thought we might celebrate that by going out with Sufjan Stevens and a very pleasant song, Holland. Hope to see you next week. Bye.